Right now it is time for This Week in the Lakeville Journal, knock on wood. It is time to be joined by Cynthia Hasslinger. Cynthia.
Good morning.
And Janet Manco.
Hello.
There we go. Okay. For some reason, I couldn't make an outgoing call there for about 2 minutes. I have no idea why, but
that has been happening over
a month.
But it's all settled right now. All right. Now, I don't know if I were David Grombach or Craig Miner. I don't know if I'd like the front page of the Lakeville Journal this morning, because you've got the picture of those two and then the transfer station.
Well, the beloved transfer station, the most popular place in the Northwest Corner. Beautiful
be.
Photo.
It will be. Well, anyway, you're continuing your look at the candidates, and this time we look for our area in the state Senate.
Right, and so David Grombach running as the Democrat. He's down in New Milford. I think that what happens is people running for Senate tend to campaign more down in that southern part of the state. But he promises, if he's elected, you're going to see his face. So that'll be great. And then Craig Miner, also a senator, I'd say more active maybe in Litchfield. But we do see him here occasionally, and of an advocate for the economy, as so many of our Republican candidates are right now. And next week, I believe we have Johanna Hayes and her opponent, David X. Sullivan.
You know, it's funny because I've known Craig Miner for quite a while, and the only time you ever see Craig with a tie and a jacket on is when he's actually doing something for politicking. Otherwise, he's out there because he's got a normal life that's out there. And you, if you didn't know him from seeing him year after year, you could pass by him on the street and not even have any idea who he is.
The first couple times I met him, he was doing, Senate or House of Representatives work, and then once you get to know him a little bit, you're like, oh, here's a guy who's always in shorts and a T-shirt.
Yeah, really.
Maybe a vest, you know.
Well, let's say blue jeans and a T-shirt. But anyways, and it's funny, but that's how you get to know him. All right, and the transfer station story right next to them, of course.
Well, this is one of the big mysteries in the Northwest Corner, which is they're saying they think. And Brian Barchin, the manager, is being very cagey about it. And so, in the town of Sharon, they're like, definitely it's opening on the 15th. And Salisbury, they're like, well, it's going to open when it opens. And Brian's like, well, it's probably going to open on the 15th, but we're not really sure. And I'm like, wow, there's a lot of older people and a lot of out of town people. And if they don't announce it pretty definitely pretty soon, it's going to be kind of a mass confusion when it opens. So we'll hope that there are going to be signs up this weekend. We're going to hope it's definite. They're still waiting for all the final little details to be put into place at the new transfer station, which, for those who don't know, is on the Millerton Road, just at the Millerton border, right near the new Eddie Meza car wash. So hopefully there'll be maps there. Hopefully there'll be somebody at the gate in the old Lakeville site for a couple weeks to help direct people to find the new location. But if you're listening to this radio show, just keep in mind you may need to give yourself a little bit of extra time in the next few weeks to go to the transfer station, because it's going to be a whole new protocol. And I think Mark Needhammer, our former classified ads manager, I believe, is going to be one of the transfer station greeters. And so they'll be stopping and checking everybody's stickers. So make sure your sticker's updated too.
All right, it'll be something that everybody has to get used to. So and yet you're right. I've heard different dates thrown around too, but the date that I'm sticking with was when October 15th, which was released to me, I think a week and a half ago or something like that.
Yeah, but I think Brent Cawley was saying definitely it's the 15th, and Brian Bartram as of Monday was like, well, probably the 15th,
but you know, theoretically, if you go to the current transfer station and the gates are locked and the sign says, "Go to the other one,"
Cynthia's advice.
If people are just coming up for the weekend and they don't realize that the change is happening, they better be sure that they're not like rushing on a tight schedule to do that. Like, everybody's going to need to give themselves a little extra time.
Extra time, that's exactly right. Well, this is another story in this pandemic season, and that is out of West Cornwall, where the Trinity Retreat Center will be closed through the rest of the year.
Which is a bigger deal, I think, than maybe might appear to be on the face of it, because they host a lot of events there. But one of the most meaningful things they do is around the Christmas season, a lot of people go there for a Christmas retreat if they're not able to be with their families. And this, of course, is a year when the governor has released his holiday guidance, which we'll have in next week's paper. But it's really definitively like no traveling. You've got to be with a small group of people, only celebrate the holidays with people in your household. So there's going to be a lot of people who are left without really a place to go. And in a normal year, how nice for those people who can't travel to be with family to go to Trinity and be in a caring community. And so that is not available this year because, of course, of COVID.
All right. And you have a story that that helps me explain. I've had people want to know why I don't have the special session update on with our representative, Maria Horn, and stuff like that. Because beginning October 1st, we do not speak to any politicians at all, simply that are running for office, simply because the amount of equal time that you would have to give on updates and stuff is just prohibitive for us. And so that's why you won't hear any of the politicians who are running for office on the radio. But you've got a story really about the special session, which took place here in Connecticut.
Right. And Patrick did a really great summary of it. And please do take a look, because the regular session was cut short by COVID. Governor Lamont called them back together last week, and they did a lot of work. And, you know, people continuing to be really mad at Eversource about how poorly they handled Tropical Storm Isaias, and then at the same time had the gall to ask for a rate increase. And part of the reason why people were so angry was that what's happening at Eversource is they're raising the rates, but the top executives are getting higher salaries, and they're laying off the local linemen, so that when you have a situation like Isaias where there was power out all along the East Coast, they were hoping to get workmen from other states to come up. And, of course, in COVID, it's not that easy for people to travel as it used to be. So really just a fine mess, and putting some sanctions in on that at this new session.
Let's talk about knotweeds.
Knotweed is a big, big deal.
Yes.
And I'm not sure if people realize it when they drive around. I notice it because I hear about it so much, but also because it offends my sense of orderliness. But there's a lot of invasive weeds around here. And often our beautiful roadsides, invasives often like to grow on roadsides because they like disturbed soil. And often as you're driving around, the visual of it is the beautiful trees are covered with these clinging vines that are often half dead. So Tom Zetterstrom and Christian Allen from North Canaan have worked so hard in recent years to defeat many of these weeds. And knotweed was a big invasive that was in the area a couple of years ago. And travels because, for instance, if your lawnmower picks it up and moves it, it replants itself really easily and spreads really easily. So they managed to clean up a big section of the Housatonic River shoreline down by the Sharon and the West Cornwall iconic covered bridge. There was a celebration of that and planting in lots and lots of beautiful new trees.
All right. You've got a couple of other stories on this page. First of all, Cornwall and COVID-19 and the challenges in this year, and then the continuation of the housing hearing in Falls Village.
Right. So in Cornwall, Gordon Ridgway did an update. And so Sharon and Cornwall are the only two towns in our region who will do voting at the public school on November 3rd. Everybody else is at town hall more or less as normal. But if you're in Sharon and Cornwall, do be sure, go to the school, don't go to town hall for voting this year. And then the ongoing conversation about the Falls Village Housing Trust, and as the commissioners always remind people, and as we remind people, all they can rule on is whether or not it fits in with the zoning regulations. They're not ruling on whether it's an appropriate development for the neighborhood. They're just saying these are the rules, it fits in the rules or it doesn't. So the ongoing conversation, which of course you can read about on the letters page as well.
Okay, some stories for humans and doggies, both with races becoming virtual, and that is the Run and Wag event for Little Guild and also the Pumpkin Run in Kent.
Right, the loneliness of the long-distance runner this year, which are often big events and a nice chance for people to come out. And, of course, there are all these runners from the 169 Town Society who go to every race in every town in the state. So they'll all be doing it virtually this year. And then Patrick, it's surprising actually that this doesn't happen to him more often, but he was out at the river and a big bear came crashing through the underbrush. So he's been out whistling Dixie and singing loud. So if you hear somebody singing great songs of the 70s and 60s on the riverbank, that will be Patrick.
Well, interesting. I had a bear come by my house, I think it was four nights ago, that I haven't seen almost all year long. It's a double-tagged bear. You can always tell once you have bears that come by your property. And I hadn't seen a bear come by my property in a while, but all of a sudden I hadn't seen this bear since the beginning of the season, a double-tagged bear, which is a big bear, came by my property. So obviously they're just finishing up, loading up for the winter season, getting ready, looking for food, expanding their area.
Looking for Patrick's trout.
That's
Janet,
exactly.
Do you want to talk about the wonderful Margaret Sullivan excerpt?
Yeah, sure. We have a full page excerpt of a book by Margaret Sullivan, who is a former editor of the Buffalo newspaper, the Buffalo News, and ombudsman for the New York Times, and currently a columnist there. Ghosting the News, Local Journalism and the Crisis of American Democracy. This book is part of a series put out by Columbia Global Reports. Please read this and then think about reading a copy of the book. It's not long. It's like an extended essay, but it really has a lot of good information in here about the decline of local news. Some of just a few of the call-outs from this piece tell you a lot of the story. The decline of local news is every bit as troubling as the spread of disinformation on the Internet. There's a serious perception problem. American citizens don't know what's happening to local news, or they choose not to believe it. When local news fails, the foundations of democracy weaken, and we know this to be true. Where there are news deserts, democracy cannot function as it should, and so please be aware of this, give it a read, and think about how you want your community to look when it comes to local media.
Well, that's so true, and because you just take a look at this right now, nobody is going to build a new radio station in a small town anymore. Nobody is going to build a fully running newspaper brand new, least chances are very low anymore, because of the expenses, but also because of the last 3 years What's happened with mainstream news and how news has been bashed from the top to the bottom. I finally, posted, I'm tired of the news being bashed. I think, what would this area be like? First of all, start off locally with no newspapers or no radio stations. You would not know, and I'm sorry, the Internet doesn't work. You will not know what's going on or keep tabs on things like you can when you have a radio station or a newspaper that's there in print.
Now, the only good thing about, I'm sorry to interrupt, but one of the really good things that's going to come out of this pandemic is people are going to be in areas now. I mean, so some very fancy people are doing things with local news that have nothing to do with local. I'm just going to come out and say. And if you think that, if one thinks that local news is a newsletter about the politics in a city of more than X number, it's not. And when you live someplace, you've got to know who the people are, what time, how to get your trash taken out, who's running your town. And only, I think, by having people realize that they need it, are they going to possibly come around to supporting it.
Now, on that note, I will switch over to your editorial page. And I was just going through this, Janet, with our underwriting salespeople this week. We have not raised our underwriting rates basically since we've been on the air. Okay.
Right.
That's 11, 12 years. And in the time, especially with this pandemic, we're trying to find ways to still keep the cost down for underwriters, but also to be fair to us. And I think the same thing happens with you as a actual newspaper that relies heavily on subscriptions and advertisement. It's, and you've got your editorial, time for an increase in the cost for this newspaper. I mean, these are big decisions that we as small businesses have to make.
Right. We've put off doing this since 2003, when we last raised our cover price and the subscription rate. But, the time has come for us to look at different ways to support what we're doing, so we will continue to be here. The membership model that we used last year was extremely helpful, but at the end of every single year, over all the time I've been at the paper, we always look at what we're doing and try to redefine this particular small business in its own way, and that really is why we're still here, as an independent entity. And, I'll bring up another aspect of what's so important about local news is that not only do we report on what's happening in the towns and on town government, we have reporters witnessing what's happening at meetings for the towns. And without that oversight, things can take a turn. And it's really necessary. So we see that as a strong part of our mission, but just doing that doesn't pay the bills, and the bills keep going up, as everybody knows. So we've done our best to keep it within a range that we feel our readers will be able to afford. The cover price will go from $1.25 to $2, and we hope that people understand why it has to happen.
And on top of keeping people informed and up to date, media in this area, local independent media, also employs people who live and work in this area.
That's right.
Not just reporters, but we employ people. People just have to understand you can't expect to keep informed and not have independent local media. You will lose control of your local government.
Yeah, and we're fortunate in this area to have a local radio station. Amazing that we used to have three, really, in this little area, and also, newspaper and other publications. But we need to work hard in order to keep them going through this time of pandemic. And it's really, sounds like a cliche, but it's more important now than ever, how we kept news out there during the beginnings of the pandemic and how you report on that, and also during storms and crises that people are dealing with, emergencies. It makes communities whole, and so we believe in it strongly, and we'll do everything we can to keep it here.
And to back up what you're saying, let's just look at the pages of the Lakeville Journal. the letters to the editor.
The letters to the editor, again, filled up two pages. I was wrong last week to say we had no columns. We, of course, had Turning Back the Pages, and that we always get in. So we have Turning Back the Pages, and that's the only column we had space for. All these letters from our readers, and every single one well thought out, interesting, different topics. It's housing, it's connectivity for the internet, it's political, it's many different topics. And give them all a read. They're your neighbors, and they would like their voices heard too. This is how we can do it.
And in the in the Lakeville Journal and Millerton News this week also, not only is a compass, but there's the additional sliding compass, which is totally packed.
That's right. We've got a ton of stuff in the broadsheet and the tabloid, as we call them. Alexander Wilburn, two interesting articles. One, a very thoughtful review of a book by a Canadian Mohawk woman as we come into Indigenous Peoples Weekend. Patrick Sullivan spoke to Tom Shackman about his new memoir, which is very slapstick and kind of inspired by classical literature. And Patrick was unsure at first and said, you know what? I liked it. Opening up tomorrow night at North Elm Home is a show by five very well-known, very talented, very lovely artists: Lily Woodworth, Susan Rand, Colleen McGuire, Sally Ketchum, and Leslie Ellers. So a little information on that. And then in the regular Compass, which is sort of our autumn welcome, and we have a beautiful photo on the cover that I took of the swans at the Ripley Conservancy. We don't have the article in this issue, but we will have an article about Ripley in next week's paper. But we have Carol Nealon, a wonderful story on knitting and crocheting, travel, which you can't really do these days. So we've got Jenny Hansel writing about hikes, and we've got Hunter Lyle writing about traveling through reading, and his sister Caitlin Lyle, one of our favorite reporters, writing about journaling. We've got my hilarious daughter Kate writing about her favorite holiday, which is Halloween. Excuse me. So she talked about doing a Zoom Halloween, one of the funniest stories ever. And we've got the secret to how to make your own pumpkin spice latte. Patrick writing about jazz. Deb Alexinas, very funny, writing about how she's just about done with Zoom meetings. Lila Hawken goes into her closet and has this very funny journey through it and cleaning out. If you're sick of Marie Kondo, listen to Lila Hawken. And Leah Walgemuth writing a very wonderful story for parents. We all have a little too much time in our hands. What a great time to do beautiful lunchboxes. And we have a wonderful profile of Jandy Hanna, who many of us know as our lifeguard from the YMCA in Canaan, talking about being a teacher of children with special needs during the COVID crisis, when one-on-one teaching is such an important part of that. How is she coping? So definitely a fun issue, lots to read.
Well, yeah, I love your headline for the curling and purling.
Yes, okay. It's just the season.
It makes even me want to take up knitting. I'd love to point out, too, don't miss our classified section. That things are becoming more active as far as Help Wanted goes, but also we have 8 tax sales listed. This is the weekend to get out there, enjoy being outdoors. Things are going to change soon, so we need to enjoy getting out there and keep watch on the tag sales and the specialist directory. Support our advertisers. And take a look at the inserts also. It's a full paper this week.
And I didn't want to interrupt you, Cynthia, when you're talking, but the whole story on how to survive a dreaded Zoom conference is absolutely, it's funny, but it's true.
Yeah.
It's just absolutely, because at these Zoom meetings, you have some people on the phone, you have some people on the internet, you have some people, the time delay between Zoom going out to your computer and to telephones is different, and it really is taxing. It really is. But it's a funny story, but it's a true story. It's true. And as we just found out, the president does not want to do a remote debate with Joe Biden now that they were going to make it a remote town hall where they were both in different locations and people in the town hall would not be in the location. They would have to join in as well. So it's the era we live in. But I think Janet Morgan points out the importance of having local independent sources like the newspaper and like our local access TV channel and the radio station, because we can present things that are a lot easier to follow instantaneously.
That's right. You know, this is an unusual political season, and actually, you and I are both looking at ways to try to see if we can't figure out a debate format for our candidates. We are working on that, but it's a hard one because you want them to be able to have an open format and yet not be unsafe. Not, you know, we're not going to be able to set up what they set up for the vice presidential debate yesterday.
No.
So we'll just have to see what we can do. But in the meantime, read these profiles and keep track of who your candidates are so you know who to vote for, and by all means, vote.
And I just wanted to say earlier, one of the things that is so crucial and so missing is to get out there and see things.
Yeah.
And that is what our reporters, et cetera, do. They go look. You know, it's quite different to hear that the power's out and to go look and see the tree.
Yes, and that is all through this. Our reporters have been out there, you know, our drivers, we've been open all through it, as have you, and it will be the eyes and ears for our community.
All right, guys, we will speak to you next week. Have a good week.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
Take care. That is This Week in the Lakeville Journal. You can find them, of course, at tricordernews.com on the web.